Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Society of New Haven, a liberal home for liberal religion in this city since 1836. If you are new to the society, you'll find some brochures and information in that area out there. And you can sign our guest book and get our monthly newsletter. So after I wangled the opportunity to have some time to put my stuff out here, Elizabeth asked me, well, what are you going to talk about for the newsletter? And I hadn't thought of a name for it, so I said, well, I'm going to talk about the journey downward, and I'm going to read some poetry. So just a few comments about what that is about. Generally speaking, upward mobility was what was expected. So a journey downward really didn't have too much context for what that might be. But when I was fairly young, I got very interested in Jung's psychology, and I read quite a few of his books, and I noticed a theme that came up over and over, which is about being high or being low. And so someone who was a person high up in society, you know, president of a corporation or something, might dream about cleaning out the sewer. Anyway, the up and down seemed to be somehow mixed up, and you would have to try to figure out, well, is it saying I think I'm high up, or is it saying really I am high up, but I don't feel I'm very high up, or what is it saying? And so I had dreams over a number of years that concerned this, such as dreaming about bag ladies. And I would be in a section of the Bronx or something where half the buildings were knocked down and there's papers blowing and there would be this old bag lady coming struggling along. And I couldn't relate to that. And then later on I would dream about being on top of skyscrapers in Manhattan and I would be like jumping from one to another. Man, well, this doesn't seem really right. So then, my teachers thought that I would join them in a life spent among high-power abstractions. I got a bachelor's degree in philosophy, and I then graduated from a seminary, and some of my teachers were quite impressed. But the thing about it was it seemed like this was kind of, again, it was too high up. It was like somebody else would get the messy job of implementation. And somehow this didn't work for me. And I was too high up in the stratosphere. So I kind of fell down from that. And I was tripped up by my own desire to touch the earth. This was a desire of which I was only partially aware. In other words, it was like I already had the plan, and touching the earth wasn't really part of it, except maybe, you know, going camping sometime or something. And so, but it was as though my own deep inside central mind was driven by a desire to fulfill itself that was really against the grain of the society around me. And this brought about this downfall that was really necessary. But it was such a thing as to really concentrate the mind. I found myself all alone without friends. I stayed alone a lot. I started working as a carpenter, and one of the strangest things was I had this very profound sense that I'd been robbed of physical life, and I had this need to work as a carpenter, but I had no way to explain this to anybody, because the people around me, at least my sense was, they just thought it was bizarre, because their expectations were to do this, you know, high-level thing. And so I was just pulled by this deep inner craving, and I really felt a lot of anger about this feeling of somehow being deprived of physicality. And there was a need to experience a kind of necessity in the flesh. Simone Weil talked about she went and worked with the worker priest in some of the factories in France. She was a philosopher, and she said the workers have a fine saying when one of them injured himself, especially one of the newer ones. And they say it is the trade entering his body. So it was almost like a longing for fate. You know, it was a feeling, well, that what was supposed to happen was to kind of float along and everything would be smooth. And it was a desire almost to have some black hand grab me and pull me down, you know, which is what happened. And then I would dream a lot about framing roofs. I'd be up on this huge superstructure, even domes or like gambrel barn roofs, these huge, and I'd be up there with a hammer framing these things, you know. And so this was, I interpret that as that my worldview was shot. And I had to create a whole new superstructure because it was really not working. So I was in my mid-40s. And I seriously considered the possibility that I might not have the time or the wherewithal to complete the task of developing a whole new worldview. I was changing horses in the middle of the stream. It wasn't a prudent thing to do, but I really didn't have a choice. I'd lost my profession, my marriage ended, and there was a remorseless voice deep inside me that said, thus it must be. So the poems are a record of how I have changed, and in order to become that self, which I most truly was, it turned out I had to reject what I now would call the religion of our time, which is progress. So sailing by modern instruments didn't work out, but I discovered within myself that I could still go by the stars and the wind and the weather. That was something that they didn't tell me in school, I think. So poetry kind of appeared in my life as a necessity of survival. So I'm going to read a couple of poems. I'm on the right page here. So I'll just stand while I read these, and Shula is going to back me up on cello in the second one, which is the three medicine songs. Divorce. At first I was angry. Who did she think she was? I arose from the bath to find all my clothes missing in company in the house. I came out before them, my penis hanging shy and delicate as a lady's slipper. What had she done with my clothes? Outside, the car was gone as well, my car that I depend on. Perhaps I thought she has returned for one last time to our motel room. Turning in the naked air, I saw my freshly laundered clothes neatly hanging among the spreading branches of the maple tree. This was her last gift to me. I will go and embrace the tree, climb up among its branches, absorb its green tide into my heart. The tree shall know my nakedness, and I will know the naked life of the tree. What clothing I need, I will take from her leaves. Under the canopy of her branches, I will shelter. I love the tree. And the three medicine songs. These were written separately, but pretty early on in this process, after I left the ministry at the end of 1978, and in 83, about half through the year, my wife said she wanted a separation. And I moved out eventually, and then that became a divorce in very short order after that. And so I was really in very bad shape for a while. I mean, I was really disoriented. And this first one especially, I was lying down. I was in this apartment. I had no bed. I just had a mattress on the floor. And I was sort of like half asleep in the afternoon, and all of a sudden the lines came into my head. So it's like John Trudell. Anybody see the John Trudell?
Yeah.
Where John Trudell's whole family was burned up in a house fire, and his friends were taking care of him, and he's totally out of his head, and all of a sudden, the lines start. And after that, he wrote poetry. So, three medicine songs. Number one, sinking down into the soft earth, the worms caress my body. The black mold opens to receive me, closes gently over my white nakedness. The earth is warm. Even the worms are warm. Their bodies filled with light. Exuding a slippery liquid, they slide over my flesh, hundreds of them, moved by great love. Tears of gratitude seep from my sleeping eyes. 2. A voice cries, "Homage to the hag!" I bow and kiss the earth before her. I forsake my arrogant plan to build the ideal city. She is merciful. She raises me up. She embraces my only anguished, dying life. In the great, anguished, dying life of all things. Tears stream from my eyes as I see in her ugly hag face sublime beauty. I am received into the womb of time. Medicine Song 3. After long busyness, I have come into the quiet beating of my own heart. A lifetime spent within right angles and right thoughts and even at times right actions has not changed this rhythmic drawing in and pushing out. Like a lordly lion, my heart goes on through all weather, or like a seal soaring in the depths of the sea. I do not cause my heart to beat. More determined is force and speed. How wonderful to feel this sweet, wild life here inside my chest. The next one was written 3 years ago, but it is sort of a reflecting back on this process of falling down and the way that looks now, and a little bit of anger comes up more about this, about how come I was being deprived of something so important. The visceral self. If a man no longer believes in his own intestines, he is in deep trouble. This happened to me in an earlier life. I was taught to put synthetic grease on my hair to slick it down neat, every hair in place, and smile sweetly at my teachers. I was taught cleanliness, how to separate myself from dirt of my own body and dirt of this earth. I was taught to regard my body as a vehicle in which I could ride, from which one receives certain useful information from time to time. I was taught to process this information in a logical manner and to care for my body, provide for its maintenance, as for an elegant, streamlined automobile. It would be irrational to neglect so valuable a property. The possibility that a man might have faith in his own intestines never came up during my growing up years, so far as I can recall. Of course, faith in God came up. That was a possibility. But God is in heaven, man is on earth. I was taught this principle. According to my teachers, for a man of our time to believe in his own intestines would be an extreme aberration. They taught me this by example, by the look of wonder and disdain that flickered across their faces whenever a visceral man, or God forbid, woman, came to their attention. I learned by unconscious imitation only, since, of course, the idea of such belief never came up. Everything went smoothly for me. My teachers cleared the way. I walked the path of reason alone, winning praise for my rigidly logical mind. All was well until disaster struck. My life caved in around me. Nothing worked anymore. Nothing made sense. I lost my job. My wife divorced me. My children didn't want to know me. Old friends gave me up for dead. Reason stammered. Thoughts ricocheted inside my skull like pebbles in an empty can. No oracle there. At that time, my intestine spoke to me for the first time. Deeply shocked, I saw there was a whole massive factor of existence my teachers knew not of. Disoriented, weeping in rage and frustration, I saw that those men were fools, the half-men who teach us the score and captain the ship, fools who throw away their own bowels, scornfully discard that which saves a man from becoming a value-neutral mechanism, useful to the state and to business, but of no use to himself. Afterwards, everything was different, utterly changed. None of the old equations worked anymore. Since I no longer knew what to do, I had no choice but to trust my own intestines. I have become strange, fallen outside the norms of the known world. I go my way trusting the animal depths, the darkness inside the body, the magnetic presence of the earth, and feeling at every moment the triumph of being alive. So a couple of more poems that were written about 3 years ago and that maybe tell a little bit more of what view of things I have come to in this very long process of disintegration and getting put back together by, who is it that puts you back together again?
The goddess?
The spirit. Well, that's just the imagination.
Well,
Francis would say the imagination.
The thought. Our thought, or however it is pronounced.
Fantasia for the 4th of July. This was actually written on the 4th of July in 2003. Well, almost all of it. Fantasia for the 4th of July. It is time. Say independence, then. Say liberty. It is time for the rats in the sewers to strike for freedom. Time for the cancer cells wild with desire to proliferate inside the comatose body. Time for the dancers to invent new dances to a music of unknown provenance. Time for the drifters to drift, picking up new lovers as they go. Time for the molecules to vibrate more intensely. Time for the earth herself to quake in jubilation, shaking off the old lessons of the masters like a cow shaking off flies. It is time for Africa now. Time for the African rhythms so long familiar to our ears to penetrate all the way in. Time for infectious madness to possess us completely. Time for our own deep desires to come out of the closet. The desire to open all the windows and all the doors. The desire to bathe naked in the surging sea. The desire to become trees, the desire to kiss the earth, the desire to eat dirt, the desire to eat insects, the desire to couple with animals, the desire to know even as we also are known, the desire to take to the open road, exploring without limit the question, what does desire want? Do you think you know the answer? Only the dancers know. Dare to know, then. Let the feet declare their independence, running as they will, dancing as they will. The slow dance of new lovers who touch the earth. Dream. The singers to sing, the talkers to talk, the thinkers to think. Let the wings be free to beat at last, the roots to plunge. the bacteria to swarm. They already are. The teeth to crunch, the intestines to digest, the genitals to swish, the brains to glow, the uteruses to contract. Let the reins go slack. Let the horse run for the sheer joy of it. Let the energies of life declare their independence. Let each cell express its intelligence. Let every fiber of existence have a mind of its own. Let viroid life invade the media of domination. Let love's excess fabricate the new communities. Let the outcast and forgotten climb up onto the soapbox. Trust the earth. Every heart vibrates to that iron string. Open the gates of the dungeon. Blow trumpets, ring bells, beat drums. She it is, queen under the hill. She comes forth dancing and rattling her castanets like an army terrible with banners. It is the earth now declares her independence with wild laughter in her eyes. Dare to embrace her. Dare drink from her foaming cup. Words of affirmation. I believe that women are an active force. I believe that the human body is an active force. I believe that matter is an active force. I believe that the earth is an active force and an immense ensemble of active forces. I believe that the earth is the source of life. Evolution is not godless atheism. It is another religion. The earth is the mother of all life, of which we know. There may be life elsewhere, but this is the life we know and with which we have real relations. That we are here, now, alive, in the flesh is the greatest miracle. The beauty and terror of this life are more than we can comprehend. There is no other life. For us, there is no other life. Let us be loyal, therefore, to this life which is in us. To this human body, this flesh, which is our flesh, and to this earth, which has given us everything. We know that we belong here and that we are her flesh. We are part of her. There may be life elsewhere, but this life here alone is worthy of our love and deep commitment. And now they sing another song. 464, is that what it is? I'm sorry. Closing words, and then there's this prelude is a little long, but you have all the words here, and it's Walt Whitman, and it's fabulous. So we'll extinguish the chalice. The grand chaos is all alive and everlasting. From it we draw the breath of life. When we shut ourselves off from it, we stifle it.